Hello and welcome to Cruising Through History. My name is Xander, sitting down with Scott Cruz. Scott, where are we cruising through today?
Well, Xander, today I thought I would talk about the legend of Atlantis.
Ah, yes. Atlantis is one of my favorite legends out there, so yes. I'm excited for this.
And I will tell our listeners, this will be the last one I do on ancient Greece for a while, because I know we did one last time on the same thing, but that's what made me think of this.
Well, that's a spoiler. Atlantis is a Greek legend?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the only place Atlantis was ever mentioned was in two works by Plato. And the first one was written about 360 BC, called Timaeus, and the other one was called Critias. And they're both dialogues. They're not history. Mm-hmm. And in these dialogue, there is a section where apparently there was an ancient, even ancienter, I don't know if that's a word, archaic Greece, there was a statesman named Solon who went to Egypt. And so Plato has him telling this story about how he saw these inscriptions that describe this ancient civilization. Now, what I believe Plato is writing, and most people do, was an allegory that he was comparing and he called it the island of Atlantis. We've heard it called the city and the continent, but he called it an island. And what happened was he was trying to show, to him, the perfect kind of state was Athens. So what he was trying to show with Atlantis was a state that was destroyed by their own hubris, because they sort of got too big for themselves. The gods destroyed them and then sunk the island. And that's where you get the legend from. And so there were a couple of people in ancient times who thought Atlantis might be a real place. Now, as we've discovered talking about King Arthur and other things, I believe maybe Atlantis was based on something. The destruction was based on something that may have happened. But as far as, was this an ancient civilization that was more advanced than everybody else, that came later.
Yeah, I feel I knew the what came later, but that this all started with Plato,
yes.
Thank you. Because we think of Plato as philosopher,
right.
Writer, not someone who would create what would go on to become mythic, essentially.
Yes, yes. And even Aristotle believed that Plato wrote about, his Atlantis was just to teach philosophy. It wasn't anything real. But where it comes, where people sort of grab the stick and start beating the bush with it, is that there's two things in it. He says that the Atlanteans lived 9,000 years before he wrote this, which would have been 9360 BC, because he wrote it in 360.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also says it was what you Greeks call, well, he has people saying these things, the Pillars of Hercules. Now, if you know what that is, those are at the end of the Mediterranean by the Straits of Gibraltar. They're called the...
Oh, yeah. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yes. And it's not beyond the realm of possibility, because the Phoenicians had, and even the Greeks had settled some in the southern, what would be southern Spain, mm-hmm. or Portugal at the end of the Mediterranean. So that has really led some people to think, hey, where could this possibly be, you know? But really, it isn't until the Renaissance that it starts to pick up some steam. Francis Bacon wrote a book called New Atlantis in 1626, I believe. And in the 1550s, Thomas More wrote Utopia, where he describes Atlantis as a utopia.
Mm-hmm.
But now these two guys are still writing as allegory. They're not saying this is a real place.
Yeah, a lot of utopia literature is all allegorical in some sense.
Yes, yes. And so what happens is we have the European Age of Discovery. So Europeans start going out in the world, and they go to places like Central America, South America, Asia, and they see all these ruins. And they're thinking, how did they do it? You know, let's say I go to Tenochtitlan, which I think I said that wrong, so I apologize, but it's Mexico City now. But just think, if you're a Spaniard, you go there the first time, I mean, all the gold, but you see all the buildings.
And you have this belief that your society is superior.
Exactly. So what happened was So a thing that started was called Mayanism, which is where, yes, you believe that while these people couldn't have built this, there had to have been something else.
Aliens.
Aliens will play into this a little bit. Which seems to play into a lot of our podcasts, which is kind of strange. But anyway, so yeah, so they're looking for an explanation on why this might be happening. So this kind of goes, and people are starting to think there had to have been an ancient civilization before these that sort of shared out their knowledge. And of course, so people start projecting things onto Atlantis. And at this point, Atlantis isn't even real, but people are projecting things onto mm-hmm. it. And that goes on until about when it really takes off is the 19th century. What we know of Atlantis really comes from that period.
Oh, really? Because, well, maybe it's more because
what we think
in literature. Yeah, because in a lot of literature, Atlantis, and even video games, to say Atlantis can be is usually technologically advanced, usually some form of arbiter or neutral party, mm-hmm. something like that. But 19th century, there's even more that came to the rumors
right.
and myth here.
There was a writer named Ignatius Donnelly, who was British, and he had done some work on Atlantis, and his theory was that Atlantis was destroyed in the Great Flood that's described in the Bible.
Oh.
Now, he believed that the Atlanteans, but I think what he did by accident, unintentionally, was he suddenly, people were having, and we've seen this with when we talked about Gavin Menzies and when we talked about China discovering America, mm-hmm. a lot of pseudo-history and pseudoscience started to roll out of this because people thought they had special insight now into the evidence, which I'm using air quotes for because there's not much. And so in Heinrich Schliemann, who discovered Troy, he was a big believer in that there was probably a submerged Atlantis somewhere because for thousands of years, we thought Troy was a myth.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, if you say somewhere, I mean, statistically,
right.
some city probably sank at some point or was covered by, I mean, Mount Vesuvius exists and covered
yes.
a city in ash.
Right.
I mean, statistically, something may be there, but whether it's the exact thing they've been talking about, that's
right.
the question.
And to me, Plato could have taken a real event and then made an allegory out of it.
And then everyone piled on and on and on over time.
And because looking for clues in what he wrote,
mm-hmm.
there was an island called Santorini, which there was a Minoan settlement on that island named Akrotiri that was destroyed by a gigantic volcano. And in fact, from satellite images, you can still see what's called a caldera, which is a big hole where the volcano blew in 1600 BC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that destroyed the island, several other islands, and like half of Crete. So it really did a number on the Minoan civilization, which was on Crete at the time.
Yeah.
And so I think, and then there was also later, like right before he wrote this, like in the 370s BC, a place called Heliki, which was destroyed by a tsunami caused by an earthquake.
Yeah, and so, but the thing is now with Ignatius, he's equating it back to the Great Flood from the Bible,
right.
which is very different from like tsunami or
yes.
a volcano. And how did that
and
further go?
All that Plato ever said was the island sunk. So, of course, this is all speculation, whether
yeah.
it flooded. But, of course, flood myths are interesting because a lot of cultures have it.
Yes.
You know, we always think of Noah's Ark. But, I mean, the Greeks themselves had a flood myth. The Mesopotamians did.
Yeah, it's one of those well-accepted, like, worldwide facts where at some point in human history, there was some form of massive flooding like that
yes.
seems to all stem from around the same time. It's one of those things where you don't need the direct evidence, but
right.
that there's so many that we can kind of infer something probably happened.
Right.
But this seems like a specifically Greek European myth,
which is the strangest thing, because as people discovered new lands, some people thought Atlantis was in the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
okay, well, how would Plato have known about Atlantis if it was in Central America in 360 BC?
Yeah.
And so, and then the Pillars of Hercules, some have speculated that before the 6th century BC, the Pillars of Hercules referred to two mountain ranges at the end of what's called the Gulf of Laconia, which is at the end of Greece, not too far from Antikytheria, which is kind of funny because this plays into it too. And maybe that it was closer to Greece than, if there was a place called Atlantis, mm-hmm. maybe it was closer to the actual, what we call now Greece, than where we think it may be out near the end of the Mediterranean. Maybe it was there.
But you'd imagine there'd be some form of evidence that
right.
that was the case.
And my other question is, okay, let's say, for example, theoretically, this place was destroyed. They had all this advanced knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how would they have escaped?
They wouldn't.
Because if your island is being destroyed by a volcano and the whole thing is sinking, yeah, you might some might get out of there, but how would some of them made it all the way to North America? You know, I mean,
oh, I see
it
what
does
you're
get
saying.
A little how would you transfer this knowledge from one place to another?
Unless other people visited from time to time, which if right. it was in the middle of the ocean, really wouldn't have happened.
Right. So I still think that, and there's a lot of scholars who study Plato and Greek, who they kind of like sort of throw their hands in the air like, I don't think he really was talking about a real place. I think what he wanted to do was juxtapose what he thought was a perfect society. Of course, we talk about utopia here too,
mm-hmm.
which to him was Athens, with this place that was sort of almost, I mean, there was something that was, it was sort of the literary image of the Achaemenid Empire, which was the first Persian Empire, which the Greeks had wars with the Persians for like almost all of the 400 BCs. And then there was the Peloponnesian War. So even when Plato is writing this, Greece itself, well, the city-states are in a state, you know, there was a lot of uproar. There was a lot of
conflict. And
conflict. So I wonder if some of that plays into it as well.
Yeah, it reminds me of like an internet influencer. Like they say something and then everyone misinterprets it. But that misinterpretation becomes the popular thing. It becomes a rumor that spreads throughout a lot faster because of the internet.
Right.
You could almost think of Plato as the first influencer.
And it's almost like, is he having the last laugh on everybody?
I'm sure Plato's probably laughing somewhere in his grave about a lot of things. Because there's no way he could have expected something like this to really be taken that seriously, probably. At least not in this historical sense.
Right. And he wrote The Republic, which is another work about, you know, writing about society and what he thought was the perfect kind of civil order and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and so that all originates with Plato, but now we get legends like, and DC folks, forgive me, but things like that are like, oh, they're from Atlantis.
Yes.
And they go into the popular media.
Right.
But that's not even related to what Plato was talking
and
about.
Where it takes these sort of, for lack of a better term, a supernatural turn is in the late 19th century, not too long after Ignatius Donnelly wrote, because they call him the father of the 19th century Atlantis revival, which you then get, there's a mystic, a Russian-American mystic named Madame Blavatsky, who had all these theories. Well, she writes a book called The Secret Doctrine, and she talks about the Atlanteans as a race.
Oh.
And she believes in a racial hierarchy. So you have a fourth race, which is the Atlanteans. And now everyone's about to see where this is going to go when I use this phrase. Then the fifth race for her was the Aryan race.
Of course.
Which was what she thought modern humans were. Okay, now we've used that term. So over in Germany, there's another movement going on in the late 19th, early 20th century.
Uh-huh.
What they were called Theosophists, which is kind of strange. So they believe that there's this, what they call Hyperborea, which was a Greek myth of a land in Northern Europe. It was a land of giants and godlike men.
Well, ooh, wait, okay, go on. I've got something here.
And so Alfred Rosenberg, who was an early Nazi, and Heinrich Himmler, and we talked about this about Tibet, when we talked about the Nazis in Tibet, they believed that this Hyperborea was a real place and that some of the Nazi or some of the Aryans had come from that stock. So that in some ways they believed in Atlantis, and some would argue that Blavatsky wasn't exactly saying what they think she was saying, because she had described the Atlanteans olive skin. So they weren't Hyperboreans, that's for sure. I know I'm really going off course here, but this is how we get some of these theories, I think. They start rolling out of some of this stuff.
So there are two things I got here. First of all, Plato, in some ways, influenced World War II. That was on my mind as soon as you said Aryan and Atlantis.
I never quite thought of that.
The second thing is the continuation, because with that Nazi ideology where there's the giants up north in those races,
right?
That thought plays into Nordic mythology. So we're getting Greek and Nordic mythology being combined.
It's kind of mixing. Yes.
Because there is, in Nordic mythology, there is a land of giants. I forgot the name of it, but it's part of that entire mythos.
Right.
And so we know that the Nazis co-opted different symbols from Nordic culture.
Right.
But this is playing into where they're adding, the Nazis took a lot of culture from different areas of Europe and co-opted it. So including this portion of Atlantis and this part of the third, fourth, fifth races, kind of all plays into all of this kind of co-opted culture.
Yes, and it's interesting because I'm still laughing about Plato starting World War influencing World War II. But yeah, it's funny because when we talked about the Nazis during their trip to Tibet and some of the kooky things they believed, you know, world ice theory and some of that stuff. Some of the occult beliefs of the Nazis are what influence a lot of this stuff. Now, I'm not saying people who believe Atlantis was a real place and there were Nazis. I'm just saying that these things played into it.
Yeah.
By later after World War II, Edward Casey, who some may know as an American clairvoyant, when he would do his readings, he'd start saying, a lot of the people I do readings of, they're actually descended from Atlantis. And so this brought another sort of mytho, another step in what the myth of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so funny because when I started looking at this, I kept thinking for eons, no one really thought much about Atlantis. They just thought it was something Plato mentioned in a book. And now you get theories like, it's the Hall of Records is under the Sphinx in Egypt.
Yeah.
Egypt pops up a lot in some of this stuff, too.
It's very similar to our King Arthur episode, where this tiny little mention of this person that isn't even necessarily named Arthur became this giant, lasting myth. And in this case, it's Plato writing probably, I don't know if when you mentioned it was like the entire book, or is it like a portion of it?
It's a portion, and it's in a he only mentions it in a dialogue. Like, hey, I heard so and so was discovered this thing in Egypt. Oh yeah, then it's like two people talking.
Yeah, and so this little bit has blown up into way beyond its proportions. Essentially, it's what's going on here.
And it really leads to even a general discussion of lost civilizations, which is totally valid, I believe. Graham Hancock, who writes, he's a British author. He writes a lot about this. But then again, are things similar or is it just random?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you should always ask yourself that. Before we did this, I actually took a look at Mesoamerican pyramids and compared them to Egyptian pyramids. Yeah, they're similar, but they're not totally the same.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Egyptian ones are more pointy, you know, they're more, they're almost like a step pyramid, which you had in Egypt, I understand that. And you had these great pyramids like Djoser and that. But it's like, okay, but maybe they discovered them on their own. Because we see this all the time. But yet we don't attribute to ancient people those kinds of discoveries. we think that somehow somebody helped them.
Yeah, we as interested in history folks, I should say. I don't have a great phrase for that.
Right.
I mean, we have a very American-European perspective as well.
Right.
And, I mean, we try not to have that influence it.
Right.
But when we're talking about the creation of these lost civilizations and rumors and other areas where there's just another society that existed, there has to be, because otherwise how would this happen? I mean, we're coming from that perspective in some way, shape, or form.
Right, and sure. And I will be the first to admit there's plenty of things that are hard to explain. The Antikythera mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly was it for? I mean, we know it had writing on it. We know it had the zodiac on it. It was some kind of astronomical device, and how did they do it? Who thought of it? Did someone give this knowledge, or has this knowledge been lost? Which I know we've talked about a few times in this, that this knowledge could have been lost. But does that mean there was an Atlantis running around giving knowledge to people?
You know? Yeah, that's the real thing. Because if there was, we would find more original rumors or primary sources if there were people from Atlantis that actually told people about stuff.
Right.
Other than a mention that Plato in a dialogue.
Right. And it's funny because he says, you know, this was 9,000 years ago. Okay. So let's take him at his word. So he wrote it in 360. It's 9360. Just add the 9,000, I guess. Now there was a culture called the I always get this wrong. Göbekli Tepe, which was in Turkey, which would have been Asia Minor, they were Neolithic. They were a lot like, and they built structures like Stonehenge, but only bigger and more of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, people are always trying to figure out how they did the rocks, how they moved them, how they moved the stone. And when we talked about Stonehenge, we discussed how you can kind of see this Western movement of these stone. Now, this took thousands of years, though. I mean, they just didn't pack them up in a car and drive them to another continent. And so I thought, well, there's an ancient culture right there that we can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's Neolithic. I mean, that's before anything. Even Egypt, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
So there's always those, maybe there was a lost civilization. I mean, like I said, we used to think Troy was a myth. Crete was a myth. The labyrinth and all that, those were discovered at some point. Now, do I expect one day we'll discover some huge, because Plato also described the island as being as big as Asia Minor. Now that's the country of Turkey. It would have been fit in half the Mediterranean if it would have sunk.
Well, even say a volcano, which would be the most likely thing to sink or remove a whole, basically,
like Krakatoa, that destroyed an island.
Or Mount St. Helen. Predictions of if Mount St. Helen blows,
right,
that, you know, we're losing a lot of Western United States and right. Canada. There would be more evidence. However, and I will say, ocean exploration is a very underdeveloped and area, simply because the ocean is very hard to explore.
Right.
Now, is it possible that somewhere on the Ring of Fire in the Pacific, and again, that's Mediterranean. We're talking Mediterranean rumors, not Pacific. I would say that if it was Pacific, that would be a whole different culture that would have this, because we got Marianas Trench in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
So we're talking Atlantic, Mediterranean area. We'd get something.
Right.
Still very difficult to explore.
Right.
And so the proof would have to come from somewhere in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's so hard to explore, I mean, I'm not sure how deep the Mediterranean Sea is.
Right.
That could be much easier than the entire Atlantic Ocean.
Right.
But still, the other thing is 9,000 BC. And,
my guess is he just made up a number.
I have a feeling that has... It sounds... This is one of the times where we have these ancient myths where I'm more confident about it. Because Earth science isn't that difficult to kind of logic out with how things work.
Right.
Because another solution is it eroded, like, mm-hmm. basically the civilization. If you think the Appalachian Mountains are so much lower than they used
right,
to be.
Right, right.
That's another possibility.
Right.
But there would be some form of evidence, whether it's people, artifacts, something. And what you're saying is there's not been any definitive proof of people.
No.
There's been no artifact found
right.
of something that's of a completely unknown origin that mm-hmm. came from the area Plato would have access to.
Right.
There's none of that no. for this.
And I still think it was because the only person to ever write about Atlantis was Plato.
Yeah.
No other Greek philosopher or Greek writer or Herodotus or any Greek historian
mm-hmm.
like Herodotus, Thucydides never wrote about Atlantis. No one did except for Plato.
Yeah. And then next was Ignatius, like thousands yes. years later.
Yes. And even when Francis, I almost called him Kevin Bacon. I mean, Francis Bacon, we're not doing the movie Footloose here. Francis Bacon and Thomas More, even when they wrote theirs, it was just an allegory. Mm-hmm. They didn't really think. Even though in New Atlantis by Francis Bacon, one of his characters says Atlantis is in the Americas when they started discovering these places. And then there's a new theory that Atlantis is above ground. Everyone's looking in the ocean, but actually it's in Spain or Portugal. They can't figure out which one because of the... There's some mention of Tartessos, which was an old Phoenician colony in the south of Spain. And somehow that got worked into here too. I think because of the Pillars of Hercules mention.
Mm-hmm.
But some are saying, no, you're looking in the wrong place. It's up here. I'm thinking, it's not there either that I'm aware of. But you'll never go. Everyone makes a lot of money off searching for this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, my off-put theory is we get close to our time. My off-put theory would be like, well, maybe because it's so old, between the Pillars of Hercules, there was a civilization 9,000 years ago that's basically eroded down and created the opening to the Mediterranean Sea. And so by the end, that opening would be another – but wild theory, it really doesn't – I mean, the most likely thing is – Plato thought of a name for a place and threw it into his story,
yep.
and it got blown way out of proportion.
And to me, yes, it could be based on something that really happened, but that still doesn't mean all the other things. Like maybe the story of the island being destroyed by mm-hmm. the, and like I said, even right about 10 years before he wrote this, there was the destruction of the city-state of Haliki by a tsunami. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well... Scott, that was a fascinating dive. Get it?
Aha, got it.
Into Atlantis.
Forgot my swim stuff. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, it's a good place to end our season because this Atlantis is such a popular myth and topic, popular right. culture and popular culture as well. It's not. It's one of those things that's not going away.
Right. Yeah.
But this is. Our season end for Cruising Through History. We got a little sick down in the down in the studio. We're okay, but we're gonna call it a season, and we'll be back in another 2 months with more Cruising Through History. Scott, it's been wonderful, and
thank you.
We'll see you all, and you'll hear from us in a few months.
Yes.
Oh, hey, Scott, did you know that listeners can actually contact us now?
They can. How can they do that?
Yeah, they can just email us at historycruise@mykpl.info.
Great. Also, like and subscribe on any of the platforms you find this podcast.